Well, hello and welcome, listeners and Patreon subscribers, to the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. My name is David Ellis, and as is usual every fortnight, I am joined by the wonderful man from the West Coast, Mr. Alex Hogg. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So we've got some interesting stuff to talk about this time round. One of which I think we need to sort of talk really, really quickly about the fact that we're pretty high up there in the rankings for podcasts, according to Google now.
Well, for prog podcasts, I mean, we're not exactly knocking on the door of Joe Rogan or Serial, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty happy with, what was it, like 9th place, 10th place or something like that? In
yeah,
the
on,
world.
On Google's prog rock podcast listings or something, yeah.
Yeah, pretty happy with that. So there you go. So all you listeners who have been supporting us from the start, thank you, and keep going. Next thing is as well, we do actually have finally, we've dragged ourselves into the world of Facebook, and we've got a Facebook page now. So yeah, if everyone could jump on there and like that, we'll put a little link in the show notes down there. We're probably going to be using it to share some news and events and things like that from around the world and from here in Australia as well. So you can probably look to it as your aggregate of all of the latest news stuff that's happening around. It'll all be available there, which will mean that we can actually focus a little bit more on main topics in the show, which will be a little bit nicer as well. But jumping into some follow-up. Now, we had mentioned last time about the new Chaos Divine single, the lead single of their up-and-coming
We mentioned the record. The single hadn't come out yet. The day we put the podcast out, the single dropped.
Yes, that's right, as is usual.
Like we said, there was like I eagerly wait and look forward to the major news story that will break in between us recording this episode and coming out. Well, yep. This is what happened. They released the single. The single was called Beacon. Mm-hmm. We've both now had a chance to listen to the single. What do you think, Dave?
Fucking awesome. These guys are amazing. It's very hard for them to do anything wrong, to be really honest with you. Amazing vocals, fantastic production, great guitar solo too, nice and simple, mm-hmm. but just brilliant, you know?
Yeah.
All the things we come to expect of them. What about yourself?
Totally. I mean, just to give you a bit of a timeline for how long this record has taken to, we spoke to David Anderton from Chaos Divine 1.5 years ago, during the lead up to Prog, the last edition of Progfest, and they were talking about the mission of this record, and this record was moving in a slightly more metal direction. Mm. Well, if this is the metal direction they're moving in, 2 thumbs up, guys. Can't wait to hear the rest of it.
Absolutely. Abso-fucking-lutely. I think it's going to be really, really, really good. The lyrics are just fantastic. I mean, the vocalist is just so good in that band. You know, the
absolutely,
fact that
yeah.
he can go from singy stuff and reasonable, you know, he's not a falsetto, but he's got a reasonable range, and then he can just drop straight into growls. And and I have seen it live, and it's impressive. Like how quickly he can swap between.
It's been like quite a few times. I mean, they are a Perth local band, and I don't think it would be too far to say off that they are probably one of the better, probably one of the top tier of the Perth metal bands in the scene right now. It's like Voyager, Chaos Divine, and then if you want to call them a metal band, probably Tangled Thoughts of Leaving sitting in third place. So those like are the three in terms of like the sort of progressive metal in inverted commas kind of bands. So they definitely deserve that status as one of the premier metal bands coming out of this city at right now. So I'm very much looking forward to this record when it comes out. It will be coming out on October the 16th of 2020. Mm-hmm. Very much looking forward to hearing it. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And with any luck, I mean, we might be able to get ourselves, a slightly advanced copy, Hoggy, and, you know, do a full track by track on that before it comes out. And maybe we can line up an interview as well with the boys. So we'll see how that goes. Stay tuned. We are very quickly running out of this year. So we're going to try and do what we can.
I think that's enough with the follow-up here, so let's jump into the news.
So the first item of news here is something that I actually woke up to. I think it was like on Thursday morning or something. And I saw that Caligula's Horse, who have got their upcoming tour of the United States, still going ahead. And for some reason, the support act, the main support act they were bringing with them from Australia, Ebon Ivory, weren't touring with them. And I went, oh, okay, maybe that's weird. Maybe the things just clashed and didn't line up. And the next thing I saw was a statement from one of the band members saying, I've left the band due to allegations that have been leveled against another member of the band. And I went, oh, wow, okay, maybe so they've lost a member of the band. Maybe this is why they can't do it. Then I saw a statement from Wild Thing Presents, which said that they'd actually dropped the band due to the allegations as well. Now, we're not going to go into the allegations here as to what they are, but it was a pretty interesting little whirlwind. Yeah, I actually found out what the allegations were through a mutual friend of myself and Hoggy, and, you know, that friend of ours told us what had gone on, and it was pretty interesting, to say the least. Long story short, basically, all the band members quit, with the exception of the one person in question, got dropped by the label and so on and so forth because of all of these things. And then there was a statement released.
I was going to say, just before we get any further than that, I mean, power to the rest of the band and the label for making the legitimate, only correct decision that could be made in something like this.
Agreed, yeah.
Like, something like that happens, you'd... disassociate, like, they cannot stand by. We're not going to talk about them specifically because that's not this channel, but
mind you, what has alleged to have happened? We've got to say that in there, because
yes, you're right, actually. Yeah, what is alleged to have happened, but you alleged to have happened, you can't stand by those things. So only correct decision was made where they would, you know, the band members quit the band, all four of the remaining members of the band quit the band, and Wild Thing Presents put the statement out to say they dropped the band.
Yes, now. So, what this then turned into was basically an example of 101 what not to do in PR.
Yes.
As we mentioned, Wild Thing Presents dropped the band. All four bandmates immediately quit. Then the final member, who hadn't quit the band, issued an apology. Now, before I give my opinions on this apology, Hoggy, what were your opinions on this apology?
I did not like this apology.
Mm-mm.
This apology is equivocating bullshit.
Uh-huh.
Tried to paint him up as a victim and tried to use his diagnosis of being on the autism spectrum as it's sort of a defense, or not an excuse, because it definitely wasn't that, but definitely some sort of defense for it, which is bad. Bad, ooh, bad on all levels.
I likened it to when Kevin Spacey came out with the allegations that were leveled against him, and he basically turned around and went, oh, well, guys, it's okay because I'm gay.
It's like, it's not okay, not even a bit.
Not even a bit. That's kind of the thing that I leveled it with.
Yeah, the knock-on effect of this is, and we can't name names here,
no,
but we have been told by members of the Australian music scene that they choose to actively not talk about being on the autism spectrum for fear of being mischaracterized in this way, that, oh, people on the autism spectrum are prone to this kind of behavior, which is not true and does not help people in that specific circumstance at all.
Agreed. It's actually done more harm than good.
Totally.
So this statement was issued. I read the whole thing a couple of times to make sure I was understanding it correctly, and then Hoggy and I talked about it, obviously, prior to this episode being recorded. Then the comments started to come in,
which were some were positive.
Yep.
And some were very critical, basically.
It was about 50-50.
Yeah.
Let's be really
very
honest.
Very critical. Obviously, there were some horrible trolls saying some really horrible things and alleging things that were not true. I mean, that's not cool. This is not an opportunity for, like, a big pile-on to just heap on lies and rubbish on top of the situation. That's not cool.
There were some comments, though, that said things like, something like we've said here, Wild Thing Presents and the four guys that left the band, they did the right thing, you know, given these allegations and so on and so forth. You know, there were people in there who were saying, hey, man, like, power to you for releasing this statement, and, you know, I'm with you anyway because I love your music, etc. There was very much a 50-50 sort of thing that was going on. Well, there was until they were not there anymore, those comments.
Well, there's no probably about it. There was a further comment issued by this person to say that they were removing all of the comments, all of the, because the positive comments made him feel uncomfortable. Which, I mean, in the way that you're going to handle criticism in the wake of a public apology, this has probably been handled in the worst possible way. You can't just, like, you either, there are two ways to go about this. You issue a public statement and you say there will be no comments further with and turn the comments off, or you leave the comments on and just allow the dog pile to start on and just don't read any of it.
Absolutely. You
cannot get in the middle of it and start booting comments and getting involved. And, like, no, that is not the way to do it at all. So, naturally, this one last comment that has been left has not been received well. There have not been, at least at time of recording now, any further comment placed upon that. But it was just, yeah, as Dave said, it was like a 101 on how not to PR.
It really was.
So, yeah. As for the rest of the band, I do hope that, like, they'll be able to continue on as musicians and are not tarred by this too greatly. I doubt they will. You know, who knows what's going on there, but... Yeah,
I mean,
we feel like we had to address this because we'd spoken rather glowingly about the first record, and we gave them an interview on the show to talk about the record further. So we couldn't just sort of let this one go. I think we had to address it here, and yeah.
I mean, I wasn't the biggest fan of the album. You know, and but we did give fans the opportunity as well to come on the show and talk about it and show me why I was wrong, etc. And that's all good and part of it. You know, we love doing that kind of stuff, but we had to address it because it's just so weird that it's happened in this particular instance. But anyhow. Moving on.
Yes, well, we have to move on. So, Dave, there was something that came to light, actually, just before we came on air, which is another a topic that we have spoken about quite a bit on this show before, which is about the Sydney nightlife. Now, this has only just come to light and said 10, 15 minutes before we came on air this afternoon. So tell me all about it. What's happening over there? I hear the New South Wales governor talking about trying to solve the Sydney nightlife again.
Oh, yeah. But talk is cheap, Hoggy, as you know.
Of course it is.
Look,
but this hey, maybe they've got the silver bullet this time around, Dave. Hey, who knows?
So essentially, what's happened is they've released a new report. It's called the 24-hour economy strategy. The minister who has been looking over it is a bloke by the name of Stuart Ayres. He's our he's a minister for a whole bunch of different things. You know how they give people like 9 portfolios.
Where they're grouping like science, arts, entertainment, sport, gambling, and some other stuff, right?
That's exactly it.
So it's one of these grab bag portfolios where it's just like, we're just going to give them a whole bunch of stuff that we don't feel is particularly, you know, particularly important on their own. So we're just going to bundle it all together and
Exactly. So anyway, he's issued a report now. It's a 75-page report, which I will be reading in full tonight, about basically the state of the arts and entertainment industry, particularly surrounding the whole idea of a 24-hour economy in Sydney.
Just before you jump in there's 75 pages, right? How much of that was explaining how the scene is at the moment? Was it a lot of pages? Because I'm pretty sure I could summarize it into about 3 words.
Shit's fucked, yo.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, no, there was I'll read you the intro paragraph, basically. Our status as a 24-hour metropolis is critical as we continue to expand our economy to cater for the needs of a growing population and reinforce Sydney's position as a truly global city, particularly in the light of the COVID-19 pandemic. Like, we haven't been going on about this for 10 years.
Yeah, isn't this basically... So basically what they're doing is like undoing everything that Mike Baird started doing about 10 years ago, right?
That's right, yeah.
That's basically how it goes?
Yeah.
Everything up to and including the point that he took a bottle of Grange from somebody. I think, wasn't that how it works? Oh, wait, no, that was Barry O'Farrell.
So this is the new report that he's released. And as I said, I'm going to be reading this in full this evening. There's two or three pages on how they've done so much already, including, and one of the things that I love in here is in January 2019, the New South Wales government delivered $1.5 million in funding to stimulate the New South Wales nighttime economy, including $500,000 in grants through the Activate Sydney at Night program and $1 million to support new contemporary music and increase participation in live music events. $1 million. Do you know how much that doesn't help? Anyway,
I was going to, and we can counteract that with the several million dollars that they spent, like setting up the armada at the front of every festival to test to like shake everybody down for pills.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we're doing this bit, and then we're going to set up the armada at the front of the festival to, you know.
So anyway, they've got examples of core nighttime economy businesses. So obviously entertainment, food and drink basically are the three big things. And they've, you know, why a well-planned and well-managed 24-hour economy matters to Greater Sydney. They've actually got an interesting thing in here about increasing transport options, which I've been banging on about for at least 9 years.
But the trouble is your public transport's a joke.
No, the problem with the public transport in Sydney is that it finishes at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, but that's the same here in Perth. I mean, you try and get a train after midnight, you're stuffed.
No, the train network, I've got to hand it to them. They did fix the train networks. They're actually pretty good. They're pretty reliable now and so on and so forth and all that sort of stuff. That's not really the issue. The issue is the fact that everything finishes at 1 o'clock. You can't get a train out of anywhere. It's the most efficient form of transport. So you've got 200, 300 people milling about on a bloody footpath. Next second, someone runs into someone else and it's on for young and old, right?
Yeah.
And like that's how why used to, they how, had like, the whole... Yeah,
this is where Uber stepped in, because the same thing happened in Perth. It used to be like hundreds of people gathering at a rank in Northbridge, and then someone would jump in the queue and then there'd be a fight.
That's right. And then this is where...
I'm talking about like probably 15 years ago at this point.
Yeah, so I mean, this is where they had obviously the lockout laws and so on and so forth. The lockout laws were repealed at the start of this year, just in time for COVID to hit, which was really good. However, there is a particular thing I do want to talk about in here, and that is, unlike many other capital cities, do you know how many live music venues we actually have in Sydney in total?
Are we counting things like football stadiums?
Counting absolutely everything.
I'd be very surprised if there's more than 50, to be honest. If we're counting everything, including like bits of roped off outdoor areas that they sometimes use in football stadiums.
Sure, sure. Recognized live music venues in Sydney, and I'm not just talking about like a little pub that allows you to pull up a stool and do a couple of covers with an acoustic, right? I'm talking actual live music venues, proper live music venues. There's 37.
That, I'm guessing, includes the football stadiums,
yes,
right?
Once you take out any venue that charges you to pay, so basically anything that's owned by some of the big conglomerates that own things here in Sydney, that's like your Metro Theatre, your Enmore, all those sorts of guys. You take away the big stadiums and all that sort of stuff, and you get it down to the guys like, for example, the Red Rattler or, you know, the Vanguard, just trying to think, Frankie's, etc. And you get it down to just those core guys with a small thing, small audience that allows local bands to come and actually play and get a bit of live music experience and all that sort of stuff and do all that. Because let's face it, we're not all going to be Metallica, AC/DC, Dream Theater, etc. You wind up with 7 venues.
I guess we should also define where the edge of Sydney is in this context.
So,
because this is a popular thing to do in New South Wales. It's like you define the edge of Sydney depending on what story you want to tell.
For
people
sure.
Will define the edge of Sydney as Newcastle if it helps them out.
So I am actually including the entirety of Greater Sydney.
Okay.
Right? Because there's one venue out west that I know of. That's basically two venues, really, out west. So eight in the entirety of Sydney. So once you get into the centre of city where, you know, in the suburbs and the more in inner suburbs of Sydney, you've got seven venues. Now, the reason I mention that is because one of the initiatives for this thing is having governments consider ways to further basically being in talks with local governments and so on and so forth to make sure that there's no, you know, licensing around noise restrictions and all that sort of stuff. There's no venues that are in any of those areas. So my question then is, if they've got something about that, what else have they got in this report? And I'll find out tonight that is just total horseshit that makes it look like they're doing something.
The thing is, this report, we can wax lyrical about this report all day long, but at the end of the day, what is like measurable outcomes from this thing? Like what is going to happen? Nothing.
Yeah,
100%. Because when you've got the New South Wales Police Minister going off about, oh, if it saves one life during the whole row with pill testing and lockout laws, that is enough to kill this whole thing stone dead.
Yeah, absolutely. All you need is a Lovejoy.
This is the thing. It's like all you need. Yeah, all you, like the Mrs. Lovejoys will come out and they'll scream to high murder about the violence inherent in the nightlife system and think of the children and bang, that's it. Show's over. This whole thing gets rolled up and thrown out the window.
Yep.
Lovely vanity project where I'm sure a lot of people were paid a lot of money to come up with a lot of report with a lot of like findings for this report. Mm-hmm. But end of the day, bottom line, nothing's going to change.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's the problem.
Yep.
You know, I'm sure their little, like, this is the Liberal Party thing, is I'm sure they'll come up with, like, oh, we'll give, like, local promoters and, like, property people, like, tax concessions if they transform their space into, like, local art centers or something.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it'll be tax breaks and so on and so forth. You know,
but at the end of the day, like the government report is like, it's all just. Haven't you got an election coming up shortly?
No, unfortunately, not for another 2 years.
No, that's usually when these reports usually make their way to the light of day is when there's an election going on.
Yeah, tell me about it. No, we had an election last year, unfortunately, so we got another 3 years of these assholes.
Of course. Yeah, what a bugger.
Anyway, so we'll keep you abreast of those things. And once I've read the report and so on and so forth, I'll probably put together a little thingy and maybe put it up on that new Facebook page that you can all come and have a look about. Anyway, moving on.
This is supposed to be a music show, Dave. We should talk about some music.
We should.
Yes, so Mark Kelly's marathon. We spoke about this on the last episode. Now, during the middle of the Marillion Couch Convention, which was a couple of weeks ago at time of recording, Mark Kelly put out the lead-off single for the forthcoming project, which is called Amelia.
Mm-hmm.
You had a chance to listen to this, Dave? What do you think?
Look, I actually haven't. I haven't had a chance to listen to this one yet, though I've got a sneaking suspicion if all the other stuff is to be believed that's all around at the moment and so on and so forth. I mean, this could be the safe track, right? I haven't even heard it, and I reckon it's probably going to be a safe track.
Well, let's start with the thing. It's like this is a new project from an existing member of a very high-profile prog band.
Mm.
I doubt that there would be any sort of, like, we need you put out the thing that is going to draw the most people in.
Mm.
And so they have. They've put out that it's like a 10-minute long single. The great guitar work in there. Some very interesting keyboard work as well, as you might expect from Mark Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very interesting project. I'm very keen to hear the rest of this record, but you are 100% correct. It is most definitely this, I think, as much as you could call a 10-minute song the safe one, but we are talking about an established prog fan base here. So, you know, the long one probably is the safe one.
That's a remarkably good point. So I will have a listen to this one definitely and get back to you.
All right.
Let you know what I think.
The next piece of new music news that we have here is that the Flower Kings will be releasing a new double concept record album on October the 30th, 2020, called Islands. Mm. Now, it's only been 12 months since their last record. There must be something going on in the world at the moment that can get everybody's productivity juices flowing. Yeah. I wonder what that could be.
Dunno.
Yeah. Anyway, it's meant to be 21 songs styled in the way of, I don't know, like Side 2 of Abbey Road or Sweet Charlotte Pike by Transatlantic. You know, the shorter songs weave together into one 90-minute sort of lengthy piece of music. Sounds great. However, the last double concept album record that I could think of that came out was The Astonishing. So, look, I hope they're able to pull it off. I really, really do. But I'm just, I just find myself becoming increasingly wary of like double album concept records.
Mm.
so far as I can, like, most of the time there's too much for one CD and not enough for the second one. So I'm happy to be proven wrong. You know, it is, you know, Reiner does come up with some, has come up with some great music in the past. But I wonder about that. I do wonder about this one. I'm like, you know, double album concept records. You think of all the great concept records that have come and gone in the world, the lion's share of them were one CD.
Yes, absolutely.
Even The Wall is, I think, about 2.5 minutes too long to fit on one CD. And that was double vinyl, but it's, yeah.
It is interesting. We'll see how that goes. Now, for the last piece of news for this week, you might remember us banging on about a little band from the United States called Thematic. Now, Kevin Samuel of Thematic has released a brand new track from his side project, Tuning the World, and he's released this new single, which is called Prism/Prison. Now, these are the first of several to be coming out over the next couple of months. Hoggy, what did you think? I want to hear more.
So do I. This is a really, really interesting, entirely instrumental guitar, keyboards, prog song. Very, very interesting. I particularly like the album cover, actually. I thought it was a great album cover there for that song there. So we'll throw a link in the show notes to places where you can listen to it, places where you can buy it. I'm very much looking forward to the rest of what's coming out with this project. It's off to a good start, I say.
I agree with you. I think it's going to be really, really, really good. But that's the end of the news segment for us. So I think we need to dive right in to our main topic, which is the brand new album from Pain of Salvation, Panther.
Now, let's start with some sort of initial sort of thinkings of this record. Now, Dave, why don't you kick this one off? Because I suspect that looking through what we've written about this record, this is going to be a lot of call and response and you're going to be taking the lead. So
possibly. Look, when I first saw the album, one of the big pet peeves that I have is albums that write everything in capitals or everything in lowercase because you've got to be different or edgy or some shit, right? She gives me the shits big time.
Now, I'm guessing you listened to this on the Spotify, right?
I did, yes.
Yes. See, now, here's my theory. I think that's because this, the way that it shows up on the Spotify has a lot to do with the album cover itself. Have you seen the album cover?
I have, yes.
Yeah, so where it's all written in that sort of graphic font. Because of the graphic font, it ends up as all caps on the Spotify.
Yeah, but all that's the track listings are all theory. Like that as well.
Same thing. Graphic on the back of the record is exactly the same.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they do a scanning thing or if it's manually input. I know when I've uploaded stuff to Spotify, it's always what I put into it. So, you know, but maybe they've got a different system or something. You might be right. Maybe. I'll concede that you may be correct on that one. But let it be known from this point forward that that sort of shit pisses me off. I'm looking at you, Taylor Swift. You did it with your latest album, which wasn't that great anyway, and it really annoys
me.
Here
we go with the Taylor Swift bashing again.
It's either Taylor Swift or Metallica, man. Yeah, but look, you could be right. That was sort of the initial thing that I picked up on the actual album, and I went, oh, okay. And then we got into the first track, Accelerator. Now, we'd heard this one before. It was a single, but, you know, obviously when you're listening to a whole album, you tend to listen to it a little bit more intently. And I'm actually reminded a little bit of Carnival. Aeons, actually. There's a couple of little lines there, you know, that I think there's a pulse, and it feels so this, you know, that kind of sort of feel to it. You know, it's a really interesting rhythm, kind of like someone trying to dance to a Latin beat with a heart arrhythmia. The lyrical content of the song, though, I mean, it could be about Trump, you know, with the term accelerator being something that is used to fuel the fire, you know what I mean? Like throwing petrol on something would be an accelerator.
See, now that's interesting, because when I listened to this song all the way through and had the chance to read the lyrics in full, I was looking at it going, this could have just as easily been about the refugee crisis in Europe. Mm. You think about it with the lyric, because outside there's a world on fire, and as I'm standing right here, reeking of smoke, gasoline, and pyre, I smell just like your worst fear. Though every step of my wake is charred ground, I swear I'm not to blame here. Mm. Now, that does sound suspiciously like, you know, the sort of response to the sort of get back to where you came from sort of argument that you get with people towards refugees fleeing war-torn places. That's my take on it. You could as easily be right as well. I don't know. But that's my sort of theory or take on it. Sort of the outsider coming to a place and sort of being seen upon as basically the devil.
One thing I will say about the lyrics too on this album, there's a lot of them that sort of start at one place and finish at another. You know, in that there's a story in the song, and then you can sort of linearly look at what's happening through the song through the lyrics, which is kind of cool. You know, I feel like they kind of stand on their own. The lyrics kind of stand on their own to the song. You know what I mean? There's not a whole heap of complementary stuff going on. But then we get on to
the complementary stuff. I also think that's a legit musical choice, but we'll get to that in a minute the next song, The Future.
Yeah. So look, I'm getting some vibes of southern metal kind of things here with a bit of sludge added in. Kind of like if Wheatus had gone metal for some reason. Don't know why I thought that, but it's sort of what came to mind. But the orchestration, though, is a little all over the place. And look, I know I'm going to be told that I just don't get it, but trust me, as someone with classical training, I do understand it. It's just not, I don't find it cohesive. And the mix seems a bit dead, too. It doesn't seem like it's all super well gelled in together. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't seem as lifelike as I would like it to be. But then again, I drive a hard bargain. What do you think, Hoggy?
See, now I'm about to be the person that tells you just don't get it, because I think that's a conscious choice, though. I mean, Daniel Gilden, though, is no fool. He is also classically trained. His day job is actually as a music teacher in Sweden. Mm-hmm. So you're right, it does have a certain industrial quality to the song. And yes, you're right, the mix is a bit odd. I was having a conversation with dear friend of the show, Doug Skeen, about this. And yes, he is agreeing with you as well that the mix does seem a bit odd. Not sure why, but
I have a theory on it. And the theory is that there's so much going on in the music. There's so many layers that you're just not going to be able to capture it without some certain things being pulled back and not where they would normally be sitting in the mix.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily, I mean, Devin Townsend's Empath has got a lot of shit going on in a lot of those tracks, and that is rather well mixed and produced, I thought.
That's true.
But did you see the film clip to this song?
For Unfuture? No, I didn't. I didn't get to see it.
The film clip itself reminds me a bit of The Matrix, like the bit where Neo swallows the red pill. Yes, I know it's a red pill. I know that's kind of got an icky connotation now, but whatever. And then he wakes up being, you know, in the vat with the cord sticking out of him. You know, again, lyrically, I mean, there's definitely some pretty aggressive social commentary here. We know it all, but what have we learned? We have it all, but what have we earned? We control it all, but what do we yearn? We stand so tall, but what have we burned? Again, I mean, this could be a whole host of things. Global warming, wealth inequality, all of these sort of great, large political, social, socioeconomic issues of the day.
It could be about the continuing rise of the West as well.
Yeah, it could be.
There could be a whole bunch of capitalism and things like that. You know, it could be so much. It could just be about one person, you know, getting to that age in life where they're going, sure, I've got all this stuff, but what does it all actually mean? You know, it is very, very lyric heavy. This song as well, you know, very, very, very interesting on that. The next track, Restless Boy, I find it interesting that the vocoder is in it. You know, the best way to add an effect without adding one is putting a vocoder in.
Counter-Sue, I disagree with that because I think the vocoder is there in service of the lyrics of the song. Because the lyrics of the song go on, it repeats the similar sort of verse a couple of times through, where it's a restless boy in a world too slow, a flame born in cinder, ash, and glow. I've given everything, I gave it all, yet I find myself alone and no way back home. Again, tying into what I was talking about with Accelerator, where it's, we have a person coming into a place that they did not, you know, a place that didn't, they sort of didn't come from originally. And the vocoder, I was thinking that could be like, that's like the system or the, you know, the government or whatever you want to call it. That's doing the talking, whereas that particular part of the lyric is without the vocoder.
Yeah, look, it could be. The comment that I was making was, you know, sometimes you want an effect in there, so you put a vocoder over it because it occupies, generally speaking, the same sonic space as your voice does. So it's a way to add an effect without actually changing anything sonically in the song. It can be. It can also completely fuck a mix. So it kind of depends what you're doing. But it is interesting that you bring that up. I mean, the fact that, you know, the system is talking, and that very well could be something that I missed. The drums, on the other hand, I mean, it sounds like it was recorded by like one mic in a room. You know, like there's no airy quality to the drums at all. Either that or it was heavily produced after the fact.
Could be a bit of both, frankly. I mean, this whole...
Yeah, it could be.
This whole record was made in Sweden. They didn't really have social... I mean, they had like the social distancing, but they all went into lockdown. So, Interesting. I don't know. I wasn't paying as much close attention to the music as you were on these listen-throughs. I was mostly paying attention to the lyrics,
Which is fine. I mean, and that's really good. That's how this has worked out as well. We get to the next track, Wait. Now, this is where my nerd hat comes out again. I love the piano opening, and I'm sitting there thinking, I've heard this before. I know this from somewhere. I don't know where I know this from. And it was extremely close to a piece from Final Fantasy VIII. in fact, it's the extreme theme from the final battle, just kind of sped up. And I was like, oh, you're joking. So I actually pulled it up, the Ultimisia battle. I pulled up the music to it and found the part. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Now, it could just be the technique is using it, so happened to be in the same key and all that sort of stuff. But I thought it was hilarious.
It could very well be. I mean, Daniel Gildenlow he did a post on Facebook a couple of days ago about him digging out his old NES and playing it with his son. So, you know, he is someone of a gaming, you know, comes from, okay, everybody comes from a more gaming background than I do. I mean, let's be fair here.
That's because you wasted time playing cricket.
Probably. And racing games mainly. I spent most of my childhood playing racing games. Mario Kart was my jam.
Mario Kart's so good. So good.
Anyway.
But this is also the first song that has like a normal drum beat behind it. So, you know, when I say normal, it doesn't sort of sound like, you know, someone just hitting drums willy-nilly. It's actually got a normal sort of a backbeat, more of a rock kind of a beat to it. It's actually probably my favorite song on the album. Lyrically, it really hit home for me as well, because it was quite interesting, because it's quite often how I'm feeling, you know, sort of almost that idea of spinning my wheels.
Yeah, you're talking about the section where it's like, wait another day, just wait another night, wait another week, wait another month, wait another year.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, how I've been basically ever since I got back from Europe, you know, it's just been like, okay, well, wait another month, and then I'll buy a plane ticket and I'll go back. And then every single time there was something that stopped me from doing it. You know what I mean?
See, I'm thinking about it in the other way around, in that if we're thinking about this as like the refugee crisis in Europe, wait another night, wait another week, wait another year until the bureaucracy gets out of the damn way and you can actually be approved to come in. Howard, I know something like that, and I wonder why.
Yeah. I mean, it very well could be. You know, I think these, obviously Daniel's strength lies in writing lyrics that would appeal to quite a lot of people, in that they're so easily interpreted by whomever wants to interpret them. You know what I mean?
Well, this is kind of this is the great like, you know, being able to write a lyric that isn't so overtly thump you over the head. This is what it's about. This is what it's about.
Mm.
And the person who's probably the most guilty of that of all is Roger Waters.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there is no room for ambiguity about what the hell he's singing about.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, picture a leader with no fucking brains. Yeah, I wonder who he's talking about there. So, you know, we're in this style here with Daniel Guldenlow, Einar Solberg as well. Those guys are very, very good at sort of writing a lyric that is a little bit ambiguous and a little bit sort of open to interpretation about what's going on and what the song is really about.
No, I agree. And it's very, very good for that. You know, I think it's quite interesting. It is very interesting to hear their interpretation of a lot of that sort of stuff. And your interpretation of mine is completely different, as I'm sure it would be completely different with Dougie's and completely different with whoever else is listening to this album.
Totally.
Then we come to the next track, which is Keen to a Fault. Now, this is a really interesting opening because of the synth. And it was part of, you know, the main driver of the song for me, drums and synth being sort of working in lockstep there. But the layering of the rest of the album, the layering of the rest of the instruments doesn't give it as much as I had hoped. And as much I think maybe as the band had hoped. You know, there is so much going on, it's really distracting. And this is kind of the point where the penny dropped for me for the album, one of the reasons why I was finding it really difficult to get into it. And that's because my mind was wandering so much as I was listening to everything, because I was unable to listen to one particular thing and focus on it and so on and so forth. You actually see that a lot in classical music as well. So it's actually pretty interesting, but it also means that for me, I don't get as invested into it. So it makes it a bit of a chaotic mess for me, which means it's hard for me to get right into it. I wonder whether or not that chaos, though, was in service of the lyrics.
You've taken the words out of my mouth there, Dave. You have there, because what I was going to say is that there is one particular lyric when I was listening to the song that is sort of drew me back in again, which was human, human, precious thing, the center of your everything, concluding, therefore, that you must be interesting. You talk about your jobs and dreams, your relatives, vacation plans and football teams. My mind just swiftly flows upstream. So you just got sort of this noise going on in the background. Everybody's talking about football and whatever else, but you, the person in the thing, are in a different place thinking about something else. So
and there is a
maybe
lyric.
That is the sort of idea that they're going for here.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe. I mean, there's the chorus as well, which says, "Every time I close my eyes, I can hear the roar, a thousand voices telling me you're heading for a fall." You know, I cut my wings to keep you near because I'm keen to a fault. You know, I think that's really, really interesting. It's like he's just almost biding his time.
Especially with the lines just prior to that as well. Every day you lecture me on measure and control. You know, that could just as easily be a sort of, we choose the people who come here and the means by they come here. You know, the sort of basically the foreign policy to refugees that we've had in this country for the last, I don't know how long.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Probably since the John Howard days of the late 1990s.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it very well could be something to do with that as well. And given that it was done in Sweden as well, I mean, they had there was a very big thing for them over there. The whole immigration thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now we move on to Fur, which the first thing that immediately went through my head was, that's a guitar Joe, and I'm extremely happy about that.
It is a guitar Joe, because I was trying to work it out. I was like, is this a banjo? Is this like a mandolin? Is this some sort of weird stringing of a normal guitar?
No,
What is this? Is this some sort of?
It's literally, think of what a banjo looks like, but it's a guitar neck.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. So you got the six strings. You haven't got that half.
Yeah.
Is it a D string on top there?
The sort of G, I think.
Is that?
I think it's G. Yeah.
My opinion, my knowledge from banjo guitar, banjo tunings comes from a samurai guitar video where he, samurai guitarist video where he's talking about how to play a banjo if you're a cheat and you're a guitar player.
So I mean, that was the first thing that came through, and then again, this is another track which sounds like it should be in a video game. But I did notice a nod to The Astonishing in there.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. 52 seconds in, there's a line where he plays it on, I'm pretty sure it's on the Guitar Joe. He plays it, and it's that part, you know, it's that part in there. If you listen to it, you'll understand what I'm doing. I probably just butchered it.
You sung it a whole lot better than I would have, mate.
But yeah, have a listen to it. As soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, that's in The Astonishing somewhere. It's a section from A Better Life. So yeah, there you go. This was quite a short track, though. It didn't really have anything in it so much.
Yeah, it was almost like a linking piece between what I imagine probably would be two sides of a vinyl.
Yeah, yeah, actually, that's a really good point. Maybe it was.
Because, you know, just sort of, yeah, you think about it, because you got the last three tracks, you got Panther, Species, and Icon. Icon is a 13.5-minute song. The other two probably would have just about fit into, like, the second side of the vinyl, so... Mm. Either that's the top of the first, the top of the second side, or the bottom of the second, or the bottom of the first.
Yeah. Yep. Could be.
So, that's my theory. Anyway, then we move on to the title track for the record, Panther. Now, this is one that we have spoken about before on the show as well. However, there is, I mean, now that I've got the lyrics in front of me to read through the lyrics, I found the lyric, I said I feel like a panther trapped in a dog's world, to be a very powerful, very interesting lyric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think the lyrics, i.e. the written lyrics for this song, are actually really, really, really interesting. I think the whole notion of it is actually extremely, extremely good, extremely interesting. Quite a lot there to pull apart. However, the hip-hop rap stuff that sort of permeates its way through, I mean, the early 2000s called, they want their sound, chain wallets, and red caps back, in my opinion. But... lyrically, it is very, very... The lyrics themselves are actually extremely, extremely well written, as if that's not something that's permeating through the whole album.
I mean, yeah, this is not the first time Daniel Guildenlow has done sort of quote-unquote rap on a record. Uh-huh. If you listen to the 2007 album Scarsick, there is plenty of what one would probably call rapping on that record as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So not the first time he's done this, and now he's come back around to do it again. You really should listen to that Scarsick record. It is really good.
I will listen to it. I can't promise you anything.
Yeah, and you're not getting it for homework this week because I've got another record you have to listen to instead.
All right. So I don't know. The whole rap rock thing kind of just, it seems a bit superfluous to me. Like, it doesn't need to be there.
I'm slowly coming around to rap, actually.
Again.
Yeah. I started off, went through a bit of a rap phase earlier and then sort of dismissed it when I became a prog guy.
Yeah.
But I've come back around to it again. I've been subjected in the last couple of weeks at work to one of my colleagues who grew up in California and is a big purveyor of rap music. Uh-huh. And I've been listening to a lot of that stuff these last couple of weeks. And I'm like, damn, some of the way the lyrics have been put together in these things are pretty damn good.
Absolutely. But this is, I think, the difference. And this is why I think it rubs me up the wrong way here, is because there's so much other stuff going on. And then you've got these really dense lyrics over the top of it, and they're talking about a lot of stuff.
So it's very different from rap. In rap, there's literally just like a backing track and some sampled horns or whatever, everything else is sort of sitting back and in service of keeping the rhythm, where the lyric sits on top.
That's right. Yeah, whereas...
this is very much the anti of that, where you've got this very interesting, dense musical passage going on top of some very dense and interesting lyrics.
That's right. And it makes it very difficult to... understand what's going on with it. And I don't know. It just it doesn't quite compute with me. And I'll be the first person to put my hand up and say, I'm aware that I'm coming across like I'm belting this album. I'm not the biggest fan of this album, as you probably guessed. But it very well may be just the fact that it's just not something for me. And I'm happy to admit that. That's fine. It doesn't make it a bad album. It's just not something that's incredible for me.
I do want to talk about one of the verses in these lyrics, though, sure. Because I think there's a section in here where it's like, we may be burning our candles in every end, but what the fuck? At least we burn, right? You? Mm. Well, meanwhile, you're just standing there, just watching it, just measuring it and harvesting its flame, snuffing it, while pretending to be defending normality, a never-ending story of what you call sanity, calling us defective, really? While I just keep burning clutch, trying to keep the slower pace of you, the so-called normal, the so-called effective. Now, having worked in an industry alongside many people, many of them who are migrants to this country, and watching how hard and fast that they work around the so-called, like, people who belong here, you know, if you can hear the air quotes around my voice there, you know, watching them, like, literally run laps around everybody else who don't really have to try, don't really have to do anything because they've got that entrenched sort of thing of like, well, I'm a citizen here, no one's going to kick me out. So if that lyric is not in service or at least describing that, I'm a bad judge.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Agree with you. The penultimate track on the album is called Species. Again, the early 90s called Spoon Man wants a word, I think. It's just almost a straight up alt rock from the early 90s track. Didn't really do much for me. I didn't really pay attention to the lyrics either, to be honest. It was
and that's
just
a shame on you because there are some very, very powerful statements in the lyrics here.
There are.
So the pre-chorus leads off with, like, I stopped watching the news a long time ago. No disaster felt new. Like, oh, do I express similarity with that sentiment right there? It's like it's just another, you know, just, you know, this endless sort of, especially with what gets covered on the news these days, you know, if it bleeds, it leads sort of thing. So it does sort of invoke this sort of sense of just eternal, like, I don't know, just, no, not despair. That's the wrong word. What's the word I'm thinking of here? Where it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, same, same kind of thing.
Disney. You know,
yeah, possibly. Sort of like the same sentiment that expressed in Synesthesia by Porcupine Tree. You know, it's only a number. It's only a death. Another soldier died in action. Turn the page, you know?
Yep, yep.
Same, similar sort of sentiment expressed in that lyric. So, yeah, I mean, and it just sort of goes from, it sort of goes through, you know. There was one other lyric there that particularly caught the attention of my wife, where it's like, sometimes I hate my fucking species, yet most days I'll do anything to please it. That's the chorus to this particular song, so I can get behind the sometimes I hate my fucking species part, because, man, do they do some dumb shit that fucking annoys the crap out of me at times.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and the verse continues on. My generation was fooled to pursue our dreams, but it's not what it seems. You never need what you want, and you rarely want what you need. So, yeah, there's a very interesting lyrical things that have been expressed in this song. Musically, I'm pretty much the same as you, actually, in terms of like the music itself. But, you know, the lyrics was what I was interested in listening to more intently than sort of the, you know, the music was very much in service to the lyric in that point. We move on to the final song on the record, the aforementioned 13 and a half minute song, Icon. What did you think of this one, Dave?
It was interesting. I'm unsure it needed to be 13 and a half minutes, though. But lyrically, there are some really hard-hitting lyrics for me. And before I get onto those, I want to mention as well, this is the first track on the album where everything has kind of let the lyrics breathe a bit more. And I was drawn to them. This track actually seemed reasonably well mixed. Everything was sitting there quite nicely. It was a bit of a departure from the rest of the album. But there's a particular hard-hitting lyric for me. Growing up will teach you how to smile. Teaches you how to smile, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I couldn't wait to be a man. The grown-ups seem to handle life just fine, but here I am still terrified. See, growing up will just teach you how to smile.
Yeah, that whole section really got me. And you know how I mentioned earlier where a lot of the songs seem to start at one point and then you actually can almost follow the characters through their arc and then at the end they've got something else completely happening at the end? The same thing happens as well. Like you've got starts off with one particular thing and then by the end of it, the whole story is flipped on its head. You know, I mean, the music itself, I could take it or leave it, to be really honest with you. There wasn't anything that particularly jumped out at me, but it was in service of the lyrics, which was nice. So it was good. Again, not my favorite track, but this whole album, I found it really hard to sort of get into. So what about yourself?
Yeah, see, I had the complete and opposite reaction to this record. I thought this record was excellent. There was a lot of the lyrics in itself were fantastic. Again, I mean, 2020 just seems to be the sort of year of the introspective lyric, mm-hmm. I think is, mm-hmm. and this album is definitely adding itself to that list as well. Mm. I thought this record was fantastic. I mean, okay. In the passing light of day, Prenda Salvation's previous record was a fantastic record, and there was a lot that they had to kind of if they wanted to try and top this record. Mm-hmm. Have they done that? No. Mm. Have they done a very good record? Yeah, I think they have. Mm. Mm. This is a fantastic, a very, very good record, and I'll be coming back to this one probably quite a bit, actually. Probably as much as I come back to the previous one as well, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it didn't really grab me, to be honest with you. Can I recognize that there are going to be some people like yourself, for example, who really love it? Yes. Is it well
made? This is exactly the same as what happened with Tool. You thought that was the greatest record of the 2020s, and I thought it was just an also-ran demo cut that should not have taken 14 years to make.
Yeah, and I mean, that's exactly it. And I don't know, maybe I just appreciated that a bit more than I appreciated this, but for me, this album just left me wanting a little bit. And that's not to say it's a bad album. You know, you listening at home, should you go and listen to this album? Yeah, you absolutely should. You just go and get some new music into you anyway. For me, though, is it going to appear in my top 10 this year? Nah, nowhere near it.
As we've mentioned before, though, trying to fit every record all the records that we want to fit into our top 10 is going to be very difficult at the best of times. Anyway,
very difficult. Yes.
Now, moving on from that record, originally when we were putting together this episode, we were going to talk about two records. Mm. We were going to talk about the one we just finished, Pain of Salvation's Panther, and the second record we were going to talk about was Tim Bonus's Late Night Laments. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when we both came to listening to this record, we both ran into a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
What was that problem, Dave?
I didn't really have anything to say.
The individual songs themselves, we don't necessarily have anything to say about them. Mm. Not as much as I had to say about Pain of Salvation's Panther. Anyway, however, we're still going to have a bit of a chat about it. I mean, the way I'm going to describe this record very quickly is that it is like melodic and dreamy are probably the two words that come to mind. I mean,
bang on.
If you think about, like, someone, if someone said to you, they want to listen to a record, but they really like a storytelling, the storytelling of, say, a Crowded House era Neil Finn or Nick Cave or somebody like that, this is probably a record I would say, you have a listen to this.
Yeah.
People like to talk a lot about Stephen Wilson's transition towards pop, and for the record, Stephen Wilson is the one who mixed this record, but Tim Bonus has always done excellently constructed pop songs all the way through, even going back to his stuff with like No Man.
Mm, mm, mm.
You know, there's, I mean, in this current world, if you are looking for a record that isn't going to stress you out or cause you anxiety, but you don't want to resort, but you want something that will take you to another place with some storytelling, this record is probably the one that I would recommend for that very specific circumstance of things that you're looking for in a record.
Yeah, bang on. I mean, for me, the album reminded me quite a lot of actually Jed Whedon. More a storyteller than a musician as such. Although I know that Tim is an incredibly good musician, but more that the music is there to support the story of what's going on in every single one of the songs. The instrumentation along with that as well assisted a lot of that. For me, I enjoyed it. But it wasn't one of those albums where you go, okay, I've got something to say about this album. It was an album, you know.
The problem that I have with this record is that I don't really have anything to say about the songs individually. I mean, there's a certain mood, tempo, and choice of instrumentation that has been used on quite a lot of the songs on the record, and save for some very interesting guitar tones, like the solo on Northern Rain, for example, which does appear on a couple of other songs as well, and some very interesting individual performances on trumpet as well. There's nothing truly memorable about this record, so unfortunately we don't, like, I'd love to be able to go track by track on this record and talk about a bunch of things, but really have anything to say about it, to be honest.
No, I'm the same.
Which is rather disappointing. I mean, it's not to say that I'm bagging this record, because, again, it's like, for that very specific thing of, like, storytelling, setting a mood, a slightly melancholic, dark kind of mood, this record does a very good job of it.
It does. But anyway,
kind of a downer place to end this particular segment. No, but
that's okay. We can move on to our album reviews then.
Yes, we can.
From this particular week.
So the album that I gave to you was Fate's Warnings FWX. Yes. What did you think of this record?
So, yeah, Fate's Warning, FWX, great album. Really, really, really good album. Obviously, from that early 2000s era, you can kind of tell by the production and so on and so forth. Very, very enjoyable, very obvious, you know, as we were talking about in the last episode, you know, you've got the big guys, you've got Fate's Warning, Dream Theater, Queensryche, etc. And obviously lumping them all into that kind of sound and similarity and such. Well, I knew what I was going into when I started listening to this album, and I've listened to Fate's Warning before. I actually really liked Heal Me as a song, which is the longest song on the album. It's only 7.5 minutes though. And I didn't mind Left Here as well. They were pretty good. River Wide Ocean Deep was an interesting track as well. So there were a couple of tracks that were actually quite interesting. I enjoyed it. Would I necessarily go and listen to it again? Maybe not. Like, if it came on, I probably wouldn't turn it off, but I wouldn't specifically go to listen to the album again.
Fair enough. The reason why I wanted to bring this record up is because I think it's probably a decent indication of where Dream Theater probably should be going. It's like, you know, because they did the really long, I mean, Fate's Warning have never really done the super long songs. They've always been very progressive, but it's always been sort of tightly constrained to a reasonable length for a prog song, which is still probably twice as long as all the pop songs out there, but never mind. So this record is very much, this is one of the things I wanted to bring a little more light to Fate's Warnings, because they are an incredible progressive band, but have sort of been, everybody sort of thinks of, you know, Dream Theater, Porcupine Tree, Queensryche, those kind of guys. And these guys don't sort of get the credit, the kudos that I think they should.
I agree with you. It's, I think they should probably have a little bit more credit given, you know, how everything goes. But, hey, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. Now, I gave you an album by The Tangent called Auto Reconnaissance. What do you think?
This is a very, very interesting record. I mean, there's a lot of long-form storytelling backed with some excellent sort of jazzy-inspired progressive music. The one that I thought was particularly interesting, which was Jinxed by Jersey, which is somewhere between Thedom and Jinjeet by King Crimson and Montreal by Marillion. Mm-hmm. It's like a story of a journey. Like the music of that, it's very, very interesting. That was a lot more of a spoken word lyric than an actual sort of sing song, but yeah, it's a very, very, very interesting record. This is very much in the vein of the Euro prog. I mean, this is an English band. They've been around for quite some time. They play that style of progressive music. So if you like that style of music and you're looking for some bands you may not have heard before, you should give this one a go. It's very good.
No, it's I really enjoyed it. And it's also on that big list.
I figured it probably was, and if they didn't tag this record like in the services as like prog rock, they were doing a major disservice to themselves, because it's very much what you would expect to hear if you thought of like prog rock.
Absolutely, absolutely. So given that, I mean, what have you got for me this week?
So I have a record that came out a couple of weeks ago for you to listen to. This is by a band that I have spoken about many a time on this show before. The band is named Ulva. The record is called Flowers of Evil.
Fantastic. I'll give that
one. So I've had a chance to listen to this record. I think you should listen to this record and tell me what you think.
All right. Will do. Now, for you this week, Hoggy, I have a brand new album that only came out about a week ago at time of recording called Sonic Birth by the Progressive Souls Collective. Give that a listen. Let me know what you think.
All righty. Will do. So I think that about wraps it up for this week here on the 9-8 podcast. Thank you all very much for listening. If you'd like to find the show notes for this episode, you can find them at the98podcast.fireside.fm/62. You can find us on Twitter at 98FM. And if you follow the contact form on our website, or you can type into your browser of choice, the98podcast.fireside.fm/contact, you can send us an email with your thoughts and opinions about this particular episode, or indeed any of the other ones that we have released. And if you feel so inclined and want to help support us here on the show, you can go over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/the98podcast, and you can chip us a few dollars. For $3 a month, you can get access to our members only after show, where we talk about some of the things that maybe didn't make into the show, or some sort of longer form topics, or some early releases to interviews that we have coming up. And speaking of interviews that we have coming up, Dave, what do we have coming up in the pipeline in the next couple of weeks?
We have two interviews coming up. One is with the Sydney-based prog band Myura, two young blokes from Sydney doing their thing. Hoggy sat down with one of the members and had a big chat about obviously the music and what they're doing. And as well as that, a little bit of a chat about the Sydney music scene and where they're probably going to be going off to chase their dream. So it was a really interesting interview. And another one was an interview that I did the other week with Demon Stealer, an absolutely amazing muso from India, where we chatted about all things about the Indian music scene, and as well as that, his love for keto cooking, as he is the host of the Headbangers Kitchen on YouTube. So check those out when they are available. And if you are an early access Patreon subscriber, you will get them a week early. So definitely, if you sounds like something that you'd be really willing to have a look at, and you want to have a look at them early, by all means, jump onto our Patreon and throw us some dollary dues, and you'll go a little bit of the way to help us keep this show on the air.
Yeah. Okay then. And sorry, I was expecting you to roll through to an outro there, so let me run that one out. Absolutely. And so thank you very much for listening to us here on the 9-8 podcast. We'll see you all again next time around. My name is Alex Hogg.
And my name is David Ellis.
See you later.
See you then.